Welcome to the Regulatory Transparency Project's fourth branch podcast series. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Hello, and welcome to the Federalist Society's Regulatory Transparency Project's fourth branch podcast. My name is Elizabeth Dickinson, and I am an assistant director with the Regulatory Transparency Project. As a reminder, all opinions expressed are those of the speakers and not of the Federalist Society. Today, we will be discussing various state legislative efforts on AI. We're excited to have with us a panel of legal and technology experts. First off, we have Kevin Frazier, an AI Innovation and Law Fellow at the UT Austin School of Law. We have Sunny Gandhi, the Vice President of Political Affairs at ENCODE. And last but certainly not least, Dean Ball, Research Fellow at the Mercatus Center with George Mason University. Thank you all so much for joining us today. I'll hand it off to you, Kevin.
Libby, thank you so much for the kind introduction, and we'll go ahead and start diving into the weeds. As the federal government nears a potential government shutdown, now's a good time as any to turn our AI policy focus to the states. If states are a laboratory for democracy, then they are most certainly a mega factory for AI regulatory proposals. In the first quarter of 2025, more than 700 AI-related bills have been introduced across state legislatures, many drafted by politicians who may struggle to distinguish between a neural network and a social network. Today, we have two experts to help us get a sense of whether the regulatory fervor at the state level aligns with America's AI goals or threatens to undermine its current status as a global leader. My hunch is that our guests may not always see eye to eye, but that's precisely the point of this podcast, making sure folks have a chance to explore policy nuances rather than political platitudes. So big thanks to Sunny and Dean for joining us. Dean, let's start with you. There's a danger in policy conversations to assume that more law is the answer. Carl Llewellyn pointed out long ago that we're trained in law school to just think law, 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 and if we don't see enough law, just add some more laws. So can you give us an overview, Dean, of why state legislatures feel as though there's a lacuna in regulation when it comes to governing AI? What are the threats they're concerned about that aren't already covered by existing law?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. And you're certainly right that sort of adding more law incrementally over the years is the history of America, and we don't tend to go back and revise those laws. So one symptom of that is that I'm not sure how many policymakers in fact know what the law is. It's non-trivial to find. I'm always amused. OpenAI in their instructions to their model says, follow the law. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess you really are planning to build superintelligence soon, because I don't know what that means. But I think, there are a couple different motivating factors here. One of them is this intuition that I think you hear on both the left and the right, that we don't want another social media or another internet. There's a general perception, and I think this perception is wrong, but the perception persists nonetheless, that policymakers somehow miss the boat on quote unquote regulating the internet. And they are implicitly positing there that there is some sort of law one could have passed that would be constitutional in the United States of America that would make it such that social media didn't do the various bad things that happened. And of course, the left and the right disagree on what the bad things are, but everybody agrees that there are bad things, at least in the policymaking world. So I think there's that. Number two, there's legitimate issues. There are things like deepfakes, which in certain cases, in fact, depending on the state, are maybe not. Malicious uses of deepfakes are maybe actually not uniformly covered by existing law. And then there's kind of also this pre-existing AI policy conversation that originated really in the European Union. You know, it's worth remembering that the EU's AI Act started years before ChatGPT. Those conversations and the concerns at that time were about things like algorithmic bias, sort of AI that could violate what the Europeans call fundamental rights and what we call civil rights. things like facial recognition algorithms, things of that kind. And those don't, those concerns have kind of continued to manifest themselves in policy. And then ChatGPT sort of came on the scene and was an inconvenient innovation for this policy world, because in many ways, I think those frameworks apply problematically. So I think it's like those three things put together. And then also the general, I think, political valence that is, again, bipartisan, of not particularly trusting the technology industry and big tech especially.
I think it's really telling, Dean, as you pointed out, that when OpenAI says follow the law, there's a big set of questions that arise under, well, what laws, in what context, for what reasons, and who's enforcing it? We've seen state attorney generals across the country have to, for example, provide guidance about how they think the law may apply to AI. So it's important to, from the outset, just acknowledge that following the law isn't always as easy as we expect, but that doesn't mean that the law doesn't apply in those contexts. And Dean, you also did a nice job teeing up what I'll attribute partially to Adam Thier, this idea of there being multiple buckets of AI policy, right? There's model level AI policy, there's conduct or discrimination or bias focused policy, and then there's kind of sector specific policy. Sunny, you played an active role in advocating for California's SB 1047, a bill that was ultimately vetoed by Governor Newsom, that was arguably the poster child for a major AI regulatory initiative. So what's your pitch for states being leaders when it comes to not only addressing some of these discrimination concerns or bias concerns, but even more comprehensive pieces of AI legislation akin to what we may be seeing in the EU right now?
Yeah. And first of all, thank you so much for having me. Really excited to be here. I was actually going to jump in if you hadn't asked a question like this, because I think this is one other thing that Dean didn't cover in why states are so excited to work on this. I think there is a really strong sense that Congress generally doesn't do anything, but they haven't done anything on tech policy for years. The most significant piece of tech legislation that's been passed in the last couple of years was the TikTok divestment, which I don't think people put in the same bucket as the kind of social media regulation that Dean is talking about, that everyone is very upset that they missed a boat on, or kind of kid safety proposals or things like that. And so I think there's a real sense in the states that, man, it has been decades since Congress has done something about this. California notably had their data privacy bill, and they were being told that, no, the federal government is going to take care of this. We're going to pass a bill. It's 2025. We still don't have a federal data privacy law on the books. There are many such instances of where the states are just frustrated that the federal government has dropped the ball on doing anything on these issues. Now, you can agree or disagree on whether or not you think the government should have done anything, whether Congress should have passed any laws. But I think the sense that we want movement to happen and it is not happening at the federal level, and so it is our responsibility to now do something about this, is very much there and very much a thing that a lot of people are feeling in states. I think California, again, is a special example where people feel this even more, where I think the California government is really excited to take on large, major regulatory initiatives or projects in a way that other states might not be willing to. And so I think that really kind of should frame where this energy is coming from. People think that the federal government is broken, that the congressional process is too gridlocked and won't move. And so now they're looking to states to figure out, okay, you still get things done, and you still are willing to work and try to pass laws. So what can we do in the context of your jurisdictions and your ability to legislate?
And Sunny, just to double down on this idea of states perhaps leading on the governance of these leading AI models, focusing on frontier models, the most sophisticated and developed AI tools, there's a concern that's commonly raised. If we look at, for example, the California Privacy Protection Agency, which was stood up in response to the CCPA, it took quite a while to get off the ground. Arguably, it's not having the greatest success in hiring rapidly. And there are probably not too many AI experts right now raising their hand to, for example, go work in Sacramento, all else equal, right? There are other places they could work. They could earn higher salaries. How do you respond to the critique that, let's just assume for a second, states should be regulating these frontier models? What about the capacity issue? Do states have the capacity to lead things like audits into frontier models, to oversee these licensing regimes that may be proposed for governing the most sophisticated models?
Yeah, so this is something that I have definitely thought a lot about. And I do think that there are differences here of the scope of the kind of things that states should be attacking versus the federal government. So I don't really think that there's that it is a good world if every state tries to create its own regulatory agency for AI. That it would probably be really bad to have, you know, 50 different state regulatory agencies that issue their own kind of guidance and have their own rulemaking authority. And, you know, you end up with this quite insane patchwork. I think one of the things in SB 1047 that we had was originally we started off with that idea. We wanted to create a frontier model for agency, and that would kind of like be the hub to do a lot of this activity. We ended up paring that down because of a lot of the concerns that I just raised, where staffing is really difficult. Getting an agency up and running is really difficult. It's talent acquisition is hard. It's questionable if they would be making the right decisions. And so I think, you know, clarify some of the things that you'd want states to do is more clarify existing laws, create pathways for people to report violations of laws, do things that make it that are more light touch, that make it easier for regulation down the line to maybe happen. But for now, I think it is not great for states to start creating their own. Like I don't think it's amazing if California and, you know, New York and then Texas and Florida and Montana like have their own agencies and they're all issuing guidance that maybe relates a little bit, but is separate. I think that ends up being really bad for innovation.
Yeah, fortunately, there are a ton of AI state legislation trackers out there, and you can try to just get a sense of the disparate definitions, for example, of just the term artificial intelligence. There's not even agreement there. And so if we see the sort of patchwork that's characterized the privacy sector and privacy law generally manifest in the AI context, then that can raise a whole lot of compliance concerns. So, Dean, I wonder if we're talking about light touch regulations at this stage. Arguably, the lightest touch would just be self-governance. We have these labs like OpenAI, Anthropic. Every time they're releasing a model now, they're releasing a thorough analysis of what risks they think the model poses. They're being increasingly transparent. Why is there an urge to say we need, if Congress isn't going to regulate these models, we have to have states do it, when it appears as though these labs are trying to be courteous or are trying to be responsible actors in this space?
Well, it depends on the law you're talking about, I would say. It depends on what the law, you know, the state law that you know, what it's trying to fix. So, for example, there are about a dozen algorithmic discrimination laws throughout the states. One of them has passed in Colorado, and then there's about a dozen more that are kind of moving through different states, some very large states. It's bipartisan, in fact. The Colorado law is not in effect yet. And these are very, very, very complex laws that mirror the European Union's AI Act and are fully general. So everything from, you know, the way AI is defined covers a lot of very, very simplistic things that have been around for decades. And they also cover, you know, super intelligent AI systems of the future. And they put an enormous compliance burden on both developers and commercial end users. And my general sense is that every lawmaker who has introduced these bills, or almost every one of them, doesn't really actually understand what they're doing. They think that they have a proposal that's been vetted by a lot of other people because other states are doing it. The states tend to be quite mimetic. They tend to copy one another. And then they introduce these laws and they hear feedback from, you know, tech companies or businesses in their state, like the Chamber of Commerce. And they realize that they've really stepped in it, just to be quite candid. I think Jared Polis is kicking himself about the fact that SB 205 is law in Colorado, the version of this. They had to create a task force to study how to implement the law. And after a year of meeting, the task force could come to no agreement about how the law was supposed to be implemented. We'll see what happens in the rest of this session. So that's a law that's kind of like, truthfully, I think the reason that law exists is because some people wanted a law to exist. And then some other people said, here's a law. This is something. Go do this something. And actually, like, no one, I'm not sure how many people are like genuinely committed to that framework. But then I want to separate that from a bill like SB 1047 and Senator Wiener, who I think was reacting to genuine problems that he thinks there are in the current system. And I think in particular, SB 1047 was a bill about tail risks. It was a bill about damages that could occur from AI models that are not currently on the market, that were not at the time of SB 1047's discussion and probably still aren't today. That would be, you know, in excess of, what was it, 100 million or 500 million? I forget. 100 million dollars of damage to property or lives lost. That's a very different kind of bill. And I think people can argue about whether or not those kind of catastrophic risks are things we should be taking seriously or not. But certainly you can understand how the current system of market incentives might not incentivize frontier lab companies to mitigate tail risks effectively. That is often a problem with market systems. So I think it's like an entirely legitimate issue to have at the very least. So I think basically the motivating factors really depend on the laws. But and then, you know, there's also things like deepfakes that are motivated often by headline controversies. Policymakers will see a deepfake of another policymaker and get scared. I think there's a very significant extent to which policymaker interest on deepfake is motivated by a self-protective instinct, because they themselves do not want to have that happen to them. They are public figures. And then also, you know, there are genuinely terrible things that are happening with deepfakes, right? There's malicious sexual deepfakes going around in high schools, right? I mean, things like this that are probably socially destabilizing at the margin. So that would be another motivating factor. But I think it's about as diverse as AI itself.
And Sunny, I mentioned that there are more than 700 bills out there. We've talked about kind of like a Baskin Robbins of AI policy, 31 different flavors of legislation going on here. What are the odds, in your opinion, of any state passing something akin to an SB 1047? Do we see any states where there's been meaningful progress on a sort of comprehensive AI bill that would perhaps have the sort of Sacramento effect that people were fearful of under SB 1047?
So I do think California is definitely unique here, both because it's where a lot of the major AI labs are based. It's also, you know, like the fifth largest economy on earth. It has historically created the Sacramento effect. And so I think people look to it more than other states to kind of set the tone for a lot of other national policy. And so I do think there is a uniqueness about California that exists and that should be tracked. I think that, again, there are a lot of people that are interested in doing the like algorithmic impact assessment bills that Dean is talking about. I know that's his tune. I think they are, I may be a little more sympathetic. I think they are well-intentioned. But I do think that they are not very clear what their goals are. I do think this is an example where the kind of tech lobby that exists in a lot of these states has been very useful to kind of then educate lawmakers or get them, even if the bills make it out of the legislature, get them vetoed at the governor level and things like that. And so I am hopeful that those kind of like extremely broad, over-encompassing AI Act style bills will not make it through. And what you will see is more of the tailored focuses and more of the like extreme risk focus that wouldn't be covered, like an SB 1047 or maybe parts of it. Like I think, you know, SB 1047 was about three different things mainly. One of them was this public computing framework that would exist that would give money for California to set up its own compute system that startups or academics can use. I don't think that part was controversial at all. And I think a lot of people were excited about that. There was a second part, which was whistleblower protections, which allowed employees of AI companies to report dangerous activities that they thought their companies were engaging in privately to the attorney general. And then the last part was, I think, what was the most controversial, which was this idea of what is the liability of developers as it comes to these systems. And so I think you could break up any one of these three things into its own bill, and that would still be a pretty big deal if each one of those passed. And so, and I do feel optimistic that you will see one of those components pass in at least one state. I'm hopeful, and we are working on a couple states where different components of this will hopefully make it through. But I think there is definitely room for these more scoped provisions and not a massive AI Act style bill to make it through.
And Dean, in this odd kind of regulatory world right now, we have just a whole slew of state legislative proposals. Meanwhile, at Congress and on the Hill and at the White House, there seems to be a little bit of confusion right now about what direction to head in with respect to AI policy. We are awaiting the AI action plan that was mandated by President Trump's executive order in the early days of his administration. That will likely provide a lot more clarity. We know from Vice President Vance's speech in Paris that the administration really wants to prioritize what it refers to as, quote, AI opportunities over AI safety. And Congress right now may be on the verge of passing what's known as the Take It Down Act, which is again focused on deepfakes. But Dean, you've written extensively on the proper role of Congress in this federal system when we're dealing with something like AI. If you were advising a high-ranking member on an influential Senate committee, let's say, what's your pitch to them for what they should do in the near term when it comes to governing AI?
I think the first thing I would do is try to push back on the notion that what we need here ever, not like in the next year, but ever, is a comprehensive AI bill. I think that that's a fool's errand. And I think the fundamental challenge of making a comprehensive AI bill is that it's a general purpose technology. And I think it's fundamentally a low IQ endeavor, in my view. Like, it's just, if you look at what the Europeans have done, it's mass confusion. They're probably, like, there's a lot of countries that are in Europe that are probably just going to pretend it doesn't exist or do everything they can to pretend it doesn't exist when they get down to implementation. So that would be number one. Number two, I would say that you want to make targeted, prudent interventions. So I think something like the Take It Down Act, perfectly reasonable, right? That's a basically just creating a pathway for legal action on the knowing distribution of malicious deepfakes. It's fine. AI Safety Institute would be another. You know, the AI Safety Institute is tasked with testing frontier models for catastrophic risk. They're not in charge of misinformation police. They're not in charge of algorithmic bias. They test models for their ability to create very, very dangerous, socially disruptive capabilities, which I think are a threat to national security. And so absolutely a federal, I mean, there's no point in having a government. If there's a technology that could create the ability, that could democratize the ability to do autonomous cyber attacks, there's no point in having a government if the government's not on top of that risk, right? I'd rather just not have a federal government in that case. So obviously the federal government should be doing that. So the AI Safety Institute should be funded and authorized. That would be another one. And then more broadly than that, I do think that there's a lot of things on the closest I think you could get to a comprehensive bill would be something on liability. But that's kind of a whole separate can of worms. And I think probably is like not going to happen in this legislative session at all. The last thing I would say is thinking very seriously about ensuring that the federal government, primarily the executive branch, but also Congress and also the courts, can adopt AI as aggressively as possible. And again, I don't mean necessarily the language models that we have on the market today, but if you think a little bit forward, the systems that we are likely to have in the near future, which to be clear, I think will basically be operating at an expert level in all cognitive domains and able to use a computer to do anything a human can with a reliability in the high 90% range. That's a technology that the government needs to adopt. There's all kinds of laws that were actually well-intentioned, some of which were well-intentioned, that that make that adoption harder. And so there's all kinds of little tiny tweaks I think you can make, making sure the government has the procurement ability to purchase these things. It would all be things like that, that are incremental steps. I think the idea of comprehensive legislation for something that is A, a general purpose technology, and B, whose capabilities are not entirely understood right now, is just simply a fool's errand.
Sunny, I think a lot of this boils down to the fact that we perhaps don't have as much public knowledge about the ins and outs of AI as would be helpful for a meaningful discourse on these topics. I mean, folks are seeing podcasts pretending the end of the world, or they're seeing podcasts that are saying, you'll never have to work another day in your life, right? You'll just have an AI agent do everything for you. And so everything's either dystopian or utopian to the nth degree. So how does the public play a role in animating this state legislative fever for AI regulation? Is it the public that's really pushing a lot of these bills? Is it legislators trying to get that press release that says, you know, leader in state legislature Y passes major AI bill? What's the pressure? What's the animus that's actually driving 700 bills coming up in state capitals?
So I'm going to go back to what we were saying earlier, which is definitely that a large portion of these bills are being driven by, I think, policymakers that don't really know what they are doing and are kind of uninformed about how the technology actually works. There's a couple things here. One is that I think there is a problem of both the public and also policymakers where they are over-indexed on the November 2022 version of ChatGPT. And that's sort of where they are stuck, that this is where AI systems are at and this is what they can do. They used it, you know, it came out, it was a big deal. You had like 100 million users sign up. Everyone used it a couple times. If you were a student, you were really excited about cheating. If you were anything beyond that, you were like, okay, this is a cool gimmick. I don't know how I can use this. You maybe tried to put in a work question and you were like, oh, this sucks. I can't do anything with it. And then you forgot about the system. And I think there is a real problem there where you can read about it and you can, you know, read headlines and see what people are saying. But to really understand how these systems work and are improving, you just have to start using them pretty actively and try to understand where their limitations are, how they're getting better. You know, I can see how Claude 3.7 Sonnet, which just came out 2 weeks ago, is meaningfully better than Claude 3.5 New, which was the previous version. And I can see like where the capabilities got better and kind of how they're changed the system a little bit. And I think that's really important because I think there's just a general sense of there are AI systems and we don't exactly know how they operate. And some people are very over-indexed on the November 2022 version. Some people just kind of read the headlines and are like, oh man, like everyone's going to lose their job next week and stuff like that. And so that is one big part of it. I think another big part that is really unfortunate and something I think we are going to have to deal with is that there is just a very negative public sentiment on AI generally. And I think this is honestly really bad, and it is going to boil up into a bigger problem in the not so distant future, where if you just do big surveys of people who are not plugged into this, who are not, you know, programmers that are trying to use Claude to help them write code faster and things like that, people just are, one, really worried about what it means for them in the future. But also, if you look at Sam Altman recently posted on X, kind of a story that they like fine-tuned a recent model that wrote a very creative story. And if you look at a lot of the feedback, it's kind of people quote tweeting it and being like, man, why would I ever read something written by a machine? I'm never going to do this. It's horrible. You know, if you go on like Blue Sky, you will start seeing even more people that are kind of like, we need to shut this all down. This is horrible. And again, some of this is well-meaning and motivated. Like, I think, you know, Dean was talking about the Take It Down Act, which focuses on non-consensual intimate imagery that is then deep faked. And that's something that like me and my organization have worked on a lot. And I think, you know, there are people who see that kind of stuff and they're like, okay, this happened and it was really bad. I'm now worried about all the other things that could happen and could also be really bad. And so I think there is a constituency there of people that just want their legislators to do something, anything about this thing that they feel very uneasy about. And so that's where I think you get a lot of this action. Again, now then there's a separate thing where I think legislators like Senator Scott Wiener in California are worried about, you know, more extreme risks that are not really the ones that are in the public discourse, and that there are, yeah, this is like proper policymaking where you are thinking about things that might not already be covered, that other people aren't talking about, that should be discussed more. And so, you know, I want to like lay out those different proposals and kind of like show that they're for a lot of the AI Act style stuff, or where you get like, you know, no deep fakes at all and stuff like that, there is a constituency and that is motivating. I do think for some of the other issues, it then gets a little questionable and people aren't tracking it as well.
Just one quick really bad dad joke that I try to tell whenever people are asking about the lack of AI literacy. I say, oh, are you using Gemini? And the answer is, oh, no, sorry, I'm a Libra. It's my bad joke. Yeah. I know, but some people will appreciate it. You can attribute it to me in your next stand-up act. Okay, Dean, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah. No, I would maybe even turn up the volume a little bit on what Sonny said, in the sense that, you know, I increasingly do think that the possibility of labor market disruption in the relative near term is fairly high. I don't know that what that's going to look like is companies mass firing people. I don't know that it's going to look like that. What I think we're instead going to see is building labor market problems by attrition. So as people retire, company or leave the company for their own reasons, companies will just not replace them. They won't hire junior staff in particular. I think what we're seeing right now is, you know, there's something like OpenAI's Deep Research project, which is an agent system. So not just a chatbot that responds with whatever first comes to mind, and not even just one that reasons before it answers, but one that will actually reason and go look at, you know, 100 sources on the web. And sort of think about them and sort of go down rabbit holes on the internet, just like a human research assistant would. It's not obvious to me why I would ever hire a junior research analyst for myself. Again, a human one. I think that's going to be true in software engineering. And I think there's probably other, I think it will be true in things like sales and marketing. And I think it could also, by the way, be true in the law. We saw the leading AI law firm, Harvey, which is partnered with OpenAI, released a legal workflow agent that does junior level sort of white shoe law firm tasks. I think we're going to start to see a situation where, unless you're a very, very, very promising young person trying to enter a knowledge work field, you will increasingly struggle to get a job. And I think that's going to be a big problem, right? Like, I think that's going to create, I think we've seen absolutely nothing when it comes to aggressive AI policy, because once that starts to be a major consideration, there will be a demand to do something. And I worry that that something is going to come from a patchwork of states.
Just one thing on that is, this is a real conversation that I've had with multiple people who basically it's, oh, are you hiring any interns? And the answer is, honestly, I just pay for O1 Pro at $200 a month, and it is much cheaper than hiring an intern. It is much easier for me to figure this out. It's always there, and it is just probably more knowledgeable than anyone that I could hire. And then there was deep research that came out and does the things that Dean's talking about. And I think that is, you know, that was the next step. But I think this was already a conversation I'd had with multiple people when O1 Pro was starting to get explored. And I totally agree that it is just going to exponentiate and get worse over time in terms of labor displacement.
And this is where I think states actually have a pretty clear lane of intervention that I haven't seen a lot of the 700 bills address, which is just this future of work question of how are we monitoring, for example, when those layoffs are occurring, as Dean stressed. If we look at things like the WARN Act at the federal level or the mini WARN Acts at the state level that address instances of mass layoffs, in a lot of cases, we're just not going to see those reports if we have that sort of incremental displacement by AI. And that's going to undermine the state's ability to help train the workforce for the jobs of the future, right? That's important information to have when it comes to addressing K-12 education, reforming K-12 education, and making sure that folks do have lanes of economic opportunity, and that we can actually reform retraining and upskilling programs that, to this point, are about as effective as watching a bunch of Khan Academy videos. So lots of room for improvement there. Before we jump off, I'll give each of you a chance to just make a bold claim, right? What can we expect from the remainder of 2025? Is there some major breakthrough we're going to see from a regulatory standpoint that listeners should have their eye on? Dean, I'll start with you because I'm in a position of cold calling, and you drew the unlucky number.
Yeah, a breakthrough. I think here's what I'll say, and this maybe is not that bold, but what I will say is I think that before the year is out, we will see a legislative framework emerge from the states that is genuinely new and innovative at a structural level in various ways, and that that maybe like comes at some of these problems from a different angle. I think we'll see multiple of those, in fact. And I, for one, am excited about that because I think right now that too many of our policy proposals are either taking stuff from Europe or just taking existing American legal concepts off the shelf and kind of putting them into the DVD player of AI and seeing what comes up. And I just kind of think that that's, I think we could do with more imagination, and I think we'll start to see it. Whether any of those legal frameworks are actual laws or whether they become laws, harder for me to say. But I do think we will actually make genuine progress this year because I'm seeing enough stuff click together just across the field that it just feels, it feels inevitable that it will happen.
Well, Dean, we're going to have you back on in 2026 to make good on whether you owe me a beer or I owe you one. Sonny, how about you? Any bold predictions?
I'm actually going to go further and say that not only will you see a new kind of regulatory framework and way of thinking about this, but you will actually see that passed into law in a meaningful state, and that will help shape a lot of the policy conversation. I think once you get that first success over the line, it will inspire both people that didn't like it to take the idea of regulation more seriously, but also people who did like it, that how are we going to replicate this, or how can we improve on this? What can we do maybe at the federal level? I think once that thing passes, you are just going to release a cascade of effects at both the state level, but also the federal level, where people start to think about this even more seriously than they already have been so far.
A sort of regulatory gold rush. So, Sonny, that sounds like you raised the bet. So I think you owe both Dean and I a beer, depending on how things go. But we'll have to leave it there. Thank you again to Dean and Sonny for joining. And Libby, I'll kick it back to you.
Awesome. Thanks, Kevin. And thank you for a great conversation. Thank you all for joining us today, for sharing your insights and opinions with our audience. It's really fantastic. If anyone's interested in learning more about all of our programming here at RTP, discussing the regulatory state and the American way of life, please visit our website at regproject.org. That is regproject.org. Thank you.
On behalf of the Federal Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, thanks for tuning in to the Fourth Branch Podcast. To catch every new episode when it's released, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spreaker. For the latest from RTP, please visit our website at regproject.org. That's regproject.org.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.